like a lot of people, I was shocked. And then I was just vastly disappointed.
Bethel residents reflect on the controversy surrounding former Representative Zach Fansler. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a controversial bill in the state Senate would remove liability from power companies over pesticide use.
I'm concerned that nobody's going to be responsible. Should the manufacturer possibly be responsible? Should the person who's applying it?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Today is the deadline for filing as a potential candidate to replace Zach Fansler as state representative for District 38. Fansler resigned after being accused of assault related to alcohol. KYUK reporter Teresa Katsourilis interviewed Bethel residents who know Fansler. She reports that whoever takes his place is sure to face closer scrutiny.
In a community struggling with alcohol and domestic violence, the idea that their own legislator would be forced to resign following assault allegations was a deep shock to Bethel residents. But when they were questioned more closely about former Representative Zach Fansler, a more nuanced picture began to surface. Most people were surprised by the assault allegations, and Fansler's attorney has strongly denied them. But when it came to the drinking, several people who knew Fansler said they weren't surprised. And at least two of Fansler's former employers suspected he drank more than he should. Myron Angstman, who worked with Fansler when he managed the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race, said Fansler could be hard to reach, and sometimes he just didn't show up where he was supposed to be. Angstman said, quote, "The fact that he had a little too much to drink, that is not a significant surprise to me." Kuskokwim campus director Mary Pete at the University of Alaska, where Fansler worked as an instructor, says she had heard, but not actually seen, more or less the same thing.
I did hear that maybe he, you know, showed up at meetings later or didn't come to meetings or, you know, there was evidence of being ill-prepared or having been somewhere he shouldn't have, or, you know, yeah. But not for me. I never saw that side of him.
There had been rumors about Fansler's drinking habits for some time in Bethel, and when KYUK hosted a live debate for the district's primary in 2016, several residents requested that we ask Fansler about it. But Fansler's alcohol use didn't make the Alaska Democrats' radar when the party vetted him in 2016. Alaska Democrats Communications Director Alice Kim says the party screens potential candidates by going through publicly available records. And aside from two drinking-related misdemeanors from partying in his 20s, Fansler's record is pretty clean. Beyond that vetting, Kim says that Democrats defer to local voters.
It's kind of a trust thing, right? If they decide not to disclose some kind of personal information, and the districts or the community elect that person to office, it's like, what more can we do?
Fansler had been an integral part of Bethel's community for years. He was a first-term city council member, K-300's race manager. For 3 years, he worked as a math instructor at the university, where Mary Pete says he went out of his way to train associate teachers and volunteer. And as a young man here, Fansler advocated against domestic violence in a community that can seem overwhelmed by it. As a Jesuit volunteer in his 20s, Fansler worked for the Tundra Women's Coalition Shelter's Teens Acting Against Violence program. He later became TWC's legal advocate. Coalition board member Monica Charles remembers seeing Fansler at TWC's candlelight vigils over the years. She also voted for him.
Like a lot of people, I was shocked. And then I was just vastly disappointed. So disappointed.
For Charles, the assault allegations against Fansler play into some of the worst stereotypes about Yukon Kuskokwim Delta communities. It's another bad mark against Bethel, she says, and whoever replaces Fansler will have to cope with that.
I think that they're going to be scrutinized even more so than other people. They're going to be under the microscope for a while. And with the wave of all these controversies coming up surrounding sexual assault and domestic violence across the nation, I think people are just going to be hopefully more careful or mindful, not necessarily careful, but mindful.
Potential candidates hoping to replace Fansler submitted their paperwork today. I'm Teresa Kotsarilis.
A bill that would protect power companies from liability related to a widely used pesticide is moving through the Alaska Senate. Federal wildlife officials have already alerted the state they've found concerning levels of the toxic compound on the Kenai Peninsula. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Jacob Resnick reports from the Capitol.
There are about 250,000 wooden power poles in Alaska. Most are treated with a pesticide marketed as penta, which is short for pentachlorophenol. It's been around since the 1930s. The bill's sponsor is Peter Michicki. The Kenai Peninsula Republican told the Resources Committee that protecting power companies from liability is important for consumers.
The reason for bringing this forward is the financial protection of nearly every Alaskan ratepayer who depends upon a utility to have electricity delivered to their home, business, or facility.
In 2015, biologists working for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service discovered what it termed concerning levels of the pesticide in soils around power poles running through the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. The refuge manager notified the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation in January 2016. State regulators then wrote to Homer Electric Association, saying the utility would be responsible for any contamination since it owns the poles. Homer Electric's general manager, Brad Janorski, testified to the Senate committee that it would be expensive if they had to remove the poles, especially as they need to be barged south for disposal.
The cost to remove a single utility pole from service and comply with a lengthy site cleanup process would be about $30,000. $30,000 a pole.
Fish and Wildlife has yet to publish its findings, but its correspondence with the state and raw data from the soil samples were released to Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
We did a Freedom of Information Act request because we found out that the Fish and Wildlife Service had conducted some studies within the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge.
Pamela Miller is the Anchorage-based environmental group's executive director. She's alarmed that the power industry wants the law changed.
This particular study by the Fish and Wildlife Service may have been at least the primary impetus for the utilities to seek a political solution to their problem.
There's been pushback on the Resources Committee. Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, said the bill would shift liability for contamination away from the utilities and onto property owners.
I'm concerned that nobody's going to be responsible. I mean, should the manufacturer possibly be responsible? Should the person who's applying it be responsible? It would seem to me there should be some responsibility somewhere other than the person who has absolutely no say about where these poles go.
The Department of Environmental Conservation is studying the issue.
And we know what the product does and its toxicity. That's been clearly defined already by EPA.
Kristen Ryan heads the state's Spill Response and Prevention Division. She told senators that recent samples were taken to see whether the pesticide leaches from poles.
Is it migrating off the pole 6 inches or is it migrating off the pole 6 feet?
She said DEC doesn't expect results for at least several weeks. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Senate Joint Resolution 4 passed through the Alaska Senate unanimously today. 16 senators voted yes to SJR 4, which urges Congress to exempt legally obtained walrus, mammoth, and mastodon ivory from other laws that ban ivory. Currently, the states of New York, California, Hawaii, and Washington have their own legislation that bans the possession and distribution of all ivory. SJ4 was sponsored by Senator Donnie Olson of Golovin, who said in part he understands the need to protect endangered elephants, but there, quote, exists a distinguishing feature between Alaskans who use the byproducts of harvest and those who go out to poach elephants, end quote. The Marine Mammal Protection Act protects Alaska Natives' rights to harvest walrus and use the animal to create handicraft for sale in the U.S. Despite these protections, local and regional entities such as Kowarik have pushed for this resolution to prevent what they see as harmful effects on the Alaska ivory market due to a lack of understanding. Alaska Governor Bill Walker holds an early fundraising edge in his bid for re-election this year. Records filed with the state show Walker had about $50,000 in carryover campaign cash and raised another roughly $275,000 since last February. At the end of the reporting period, February 1st, he had about $280,000 on hand. Walker is running as an independent. On the Republican side, former state Senator Mike Dunleavy reported raising about $105,000 from mid-June until February 1st. He ended the reporting period with nearly $75,000 available. Businessman Scott Hawkins has contributed $200,000 of his own money to the roughly $215,000 raised since last September. Representative Mike Chenault raised just over $30,000 since September. Hawkins and Chenault have not yet formally filed as candidates with the Division of Elections. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, lower 48 diseases turn Alaska biologists' attention to bats.
I think with the spread of white nose syndrome, this fungus that's killing millions of bats out east, people have become more interested in bats.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The last six of the 13 mushers who completed this year's Yukon Quest finished the race yesterday in Whitehorse. Despite slower times, the back-of-the-pack mushers completed a race in which half the field didn't make it. 2018 Yukon Quest champion Alan Moore, winning the race with all the dogs he started with, is remarkable, but not unprecedented, according to Yukon Quest Alaska Executive Director Marty Struery.
I want to give Alan credit for doing what he did, which was extraordinary, getting there with all 14 dogs. But back in the day when we had 12 dogs as the maximum, I get a feeling that there were others that have done that same thing.
Story says the statistic has not been specifically tracked over the race's 35-year history.
I would be comfortable with not the first or the only to ever, but more with words like one of the rare times or one of the few.
Clearly, a winner coming in with 14 is a really stellar achievement, but that doesn't mean that no one didn't win before that with fewer dogs.
University of Alaska Fairbanks journalism professor and Yukon Quest veteran Brian O'Donohue points to the Quest's first champion, Sonny Lindner, who he says started and finished his 1984 winning run with 9 dogs. Lindner confirms that, but does not at all downplay what Alan Moore did this year, noting it's harder to manage 14 to victory.
14's twice as much work, booties and food and everything else, so Alan did a good job.
2-year Yukon Quest champion John Schandelmeyer says he also didn't drop any dogs in his first win.
I did that in 1992 when it was a 12-dog limit.
Mushers stress that picking the right dogs as well as managing and caring for them along the trail are key to finishing with a full team. Anchorage skier Scott Patterson again exceeded expectations at the Olympics last night. Patterson towed the line in the men's 15-kilometer skate race alongside fellow APU teammates Eric Bjornson and Tyler Cornfield. The Alaskan athletes were among the field of more than 100 skiers. Patterson had the best result for the Americans, finishing in 21st place. Eric Bjornson finished 41st, and in his debut race at the Olympics, Tyler Cornfield finished 74th. Tonight is the women's 4x5-kilometer relay. The U.S. ski team announced this morning Alaskan skiers Sadie Bjornson and Keegan Randall will make up 2 of the 4 legs of the relay. Bjornson will ski a classic leg, and Randall will ski a skate leg. Fans in Alaska will have to stay up late tonight to catch the race live. The women's 4x5-kilometer relay begins at 12:30 a.m. early Saturday morning. Bristol Bay has another air carrier in town. Raven Alaska flew its inaugural passenger flight from Bristol Bay to Anchorage on Wednesday. KDLG's Avery Lill was on the flight and has the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard on Raven Alaska's inaugural flight from Dillingham and King Salmon to Anchorage. Despite the hoopla and celebration, we still have rules to follow.
That's Diane Andrew Ross, a flight attendant with Raven Alaska. She welcomed aboard a plane full of passengers from Dillingham and King Salmon on Valentine's Day for Raven's first flight from Bristol Bay to Anchorage. The Bristol Bay residents who boarded the flight were enthusiastic for another airline to provide service between Anchorage and regional hubs, King Salmon and Dillingham. Previously, Pin Air offered the only regular year-round flights connecting Anchorage and Bristol Bay.
We are pretty excited for the very first flight. It's very expensive to live out in rural Alaska. More competition, prices should come down, more people flying again.
That was Georgette Baumgartner from Dillingham. She was among several passengers who expressed the hope that increased competition will bring down the price of plane tickets. This is the first new route that Raven Alaska has added in 6 years. President and CEO David Flieger said that Bristol Bay was an obvious choice for expansion.
When we look at our network and where we fly in the state, we weren't flying there, and you know, some of the folks who've been with the company 10 plus years have said, hey, you know, let's get into these communities. So we looked at it, we ran the numbers, heard overwhelmingly from the communities that they wanted more competition and more reliable service, and here we are.
Flieger said that among the main considerations for expansion were ensuring local demand for another air carrier and securing facilities for operation. Rather than building or buying their own terminals, Raven is contracting with local businesses to operate terminals for its flights. In King Salmon, Raven is contracting with King Salmon Ground Service for a terminal. In Dillingham, Freshwater Adventures is providing a terminal. Jerry Ball is the owner of Freshwater Adventures. Like Wednesday's passengers, Ball also believes that the competition between airlines will benefit Bristol Bay residents.
Yeah, it's always good to have competition, and Peninsula's been a good airline over the years and still is, and yeah, I have nothing disparaging to say about anybody, and just, yeah, an alternative service here. I think it's going to, people of Bristol Bay is going to enjoy it, and it's going to be a good thing.
Currently, Raven offers 2 round-trip flights per day between Anchorage, Dillingham, and King Salmon on weekdays. On weekends, they offer 1 round-trip flight per day. Raven operates Bombardier Dash 8 aircraft on these routes, which can seat up to 29 passengers. They cruise at about 220 knots, and absent significant headwinds, can make the trip between Dillingham and Anchorage in about 1 hour and 20 minutes. As the first flight wrapped up, Bristol Bay residents and Raven executives weren't the only ones excited for the day's development. Ross, the flight attendant, lives in Anchorage, but originally she's from Aleknagik.
Oh, I've been waiting for this since 2001, and I requested for years and asked if we can go to Dillingham and King Salmon, and oh, it was heartwarming, it was exciting, and I got to see friends and family. So I'm looking forward to more of that in the future as well.
In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
The Western Interior Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting February 20th and 21st, starting at 9 a.m. at the Diamond Center Hotel in Anchorage. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknagik.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, going batty. Bats are a pretty low priority for most Alaskan biologists, but that could be changing due to a recent uptick in the creature's population. Add to that a disease that's been killing millions of bats in the lower 48, and Alaska might be taking note with the rest of the nation. Alaska Public Media correspondent Ammon Swenson has more.
That is Myotis lucivicus, better known as a little brown bat. They're the most widely dispersed bat species in North America. Only weighing about half an ounce, they're also the most common bat in Alaska. Research here has only started gaining traction within the last 10 years. Biologists are working to gather even the most basic data about the creatures, and now with the added urgency of a deadly threat knocking at the door. Jessica Reimer is an assistant zoologist at the Alaska Center for Conservation Science, based out of the University of Alaska Anchorage. She studies bats in northern latitudes in the U.S. and Canada.
I think with the spread of white nose syndrome, this fungus that's killing millions of bats out east, people have become more interested in bats. And as more people start to look at bats in Alaska and realize that they're here and that they're surviving and persisting, there's more interest in other people kind of jumping on the bandwagon and looking at them as well.
Caused by a fungus growing and spreading in the confined spaces of bat colonies, white nose syndrome can have a mortality rate of 90 or even 100%, and little brown bats are especially susceptible. Over the last decade, white nose syndrome killed over 5 million bats in the lower 48 and has been working its way across the US and Canada. In 2016, researchers found the fungus in Washington state, and it might only be a matter of time before it reaches Alaska. With such minimal data available, it could be difficult to know if or when white nose syndrome arrives and what the effects might be. Bats just haven't been a high priority species to research.
Alaska is a huge place, and so if you're going to pick something to study, you're going to go for the ones that people are really interested in or that need to be harvested or that contribute to the local economy in some way.
Doing research in Alaska can be tough. Access, weather, geography, but a little technology goes a long way. Using specialized recording devices that can pick up bats' high-frequency echolocations, researchers can collect all sorts of general information about their subjects.
And so by putting out these passive recorders, we can record those high-frequency echolocations, bring that back to the office, and tell which type of bat was there, what were they doing, when were they there, and then start matching that with climate data to say, okay, what sort of environmental factors were dictating whether we were catching bat noise or whether we got radio silence.
Bat audio can even allow researchers to determine some specific behaviors like drinking or hunting. Here's a recording of a little brown bat. It's slowed down to 1/10 speed and the frequency is lowered so we can hear it. Listen to that steady, consistent tweeting noise. That's what's called a search phase. The bat's flying around, sending out pulses of sound that might bounce off a mosquito or some other insect. Finally, we hear what's called the terminal buzz. At this point, the bat's zeroed in on a meal and is essentially locking on with echolocation. The recorders do have their shortcomings, though.
You know, they have a directional microphone, so it can't pick up everything. And just because we didn't record a bat in a certain area doesn't mean that bats never use that area.
That's Jessica Faust. She's a master's student at UAA studying bats in the Chugach National Forest.
You can also have 100 sound files from one night, and you can't tell the difference between if it was 100 bats that passed by or if it was one bat that passed by 100 times.
She says the recorders can't really give researchers a solid population estimate, but the typical method of netting and tagging bats isn't always that effective either. Since bats are nocturnal, the best time to find them is at night, so summers in Alaska provide a unique challenge.
And if it's bright out, then they see our nets. I've had so many nights in the field where I've seen so many bats just go by and you can see them fly near the net, see it, and fly right around it.
Not to mention when they do catch a little brown bat, they need to tag the tiny thing.
I thought it was so funny. When I first held one, it's like they're holding their mouth like wide open and they look like they're just like smiling and happy. And then you realize that they're screaming, but it's too high pitched for you to hear. So they're really, I don't know, I think they're hilarious to handle.
While researching bats in Alaska can be an uphill battle, organizations like the Alaska Center for Conservation Science and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have been enlisting the public's help. In Southeast, where bats are more abundant, Fish and Game have a program where people can borrow recording devices, attach a microphone to their car, and record bats while driving along an established route. Citizen scientists can also get involved by turning in dead bats to Fish and Game or letting the Center for Conservation Science know if you have bats roosting in your house. For AK, I'm Ammon Swenson in Anchorage.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Ely Ferrati in Anchorage. Ferrati is a bartender at Fiori d'Italia, which his family owns. He he claims to have the largest whiskey collection in the state.
When I first got into it, I got thrown behind the bar, and you know, people come in, they order whiskey, and they ask you questions of how does it taste, what do you think, this and that, and I didn't like whiskey at first. So I throughout the days and stuff, I just started trying different things and came up across a certain bottle, the Balvenie, and decided, like, wow, I actually really like this stuff. It took me a while. A couple years ago, say about 5 years ago, I had a guy from Diageo come in, and he was a master of whiskey. And he walked into the bar with the reps, and he takes a stop, and he looks left and right. And first words out of his mouth were like, I can't believe this is in a neighborhood bar in Spinard. People come now and they want to try new things. They love to do classes and stuff like that. And they want to learn. They love to learn. And that's kind of propelled my whiskey knowledge. As far as I know, nobody's ever came to say elsewise, but we have the biggest whiskey collection in Alaska. I was just put on a Thrillist article for top whiskey bar in the state. It's pretty honorable. It's still growing, so there's bottles added every week. We want you to relax, enjoy, have a great time, especially if you're at the bar, meeting my regulars and everybody conversating, and just makes the bar scene fun. It makes my job fun to see everybody else happy.
Ely Ferrati lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ammon Swenson, Wesley Early, and Victoria Peterson. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org/news. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Teresa Katsarilis in Bethel, Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Davis Hovey in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Russell in Anchorage, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. ACPE's education loan refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.